Today's episode of the Survival Podcast. It is episode 3643, and we're calling this episode The Great Monetary Divide. And it will also be an episode of Bitcoin Breakout, though I don't know that I really consider this a Bitcoin-centric episode. It's just an episode that has a lot to do with money and will have some things to do with Bitcoin, though Bitcoin won't be the only option you have for the monetary divide. It'll probably be the best one. I wasn't really sure what I was going to talk about today, hence we are rolling at 1300 Central Daylight Time, or 1 o'clock p.m. for you civilian types, because it took me this long to get ready to go, because as of about 10 o'clock this morning, I didn't know what we were going to talk about today, but there's been a lot going on in the checkbox Jack was right category. I try not to be an I told you so type of guy, but when a lot of things that I've been talking about start happening in rapid succession, and some of these things are things I've been talking about for a year or so, some of these things have been things I've been talking about for 4 years now and saying this is going to happen and now it isn't, it all comes together, I will point it out. We're going to look at what's going on in the world right now. And I will tell you that 90% of this episode is going to sound very optimistic. And that means that some of you are going to be really angry and really upset and wailing and gnashing your teeth and acting like little children. Because when anybody tells you anything can be good, you just have a, I don't know, weird ass reaction. Like I said, there's a lot of people in the space can't take a fucking win to save their lives, man. I am going to talk about how a lot of it could go wrong toward the end. But I want to come at this episode today not from, let's say, an optimistic or a pessimistic stance. This is reality. Good and bad shit will happen all the time. There's no way out of it, especially at the macro level. But even what looks bad has created amazing opportunities for people throughout history. There are people, if you think about, like, if you want to think of a country you really didn't want to be in during World War II, Germany, right? Germany. But there were people that built fortunes prior to and through and during World War II and kept right on doing it after the Germany surrendered. If that person can find an optimistic path, then maybe you can too, is what I'm getting at. In other words, you don't get to choose the hand that you will be dealt in life, either individually or at the macro level, let's say as an American or as a Westerner or wherever you are, right? You don't get to choose that. You do get to choose how you play the hand. And one of the biggest differences between winners and losers isn't that the winner is always happy and go lucky and it's all wonderful. It's that they seek out the opportunity. And so I'm looking for the opportunities and what I know is going to happen and some of the things I think are likely to happen. And since I'm looking for the opportunities, it's going to sound optimistic because we're going to talk about the freaking opportunities instead of telling you to go be an Eeyore and crawl in a little hole and say it'll never work and be an annoying pain in the ass like so many of you are. Jake, I'm just messing with Jake because I like Jake. Jake's actually one of the more optimistic and get shit done people I know. I should have said that now. I'm going to wind him up. He'll never shut up now until he gets on his plane and flies away. Anyway, I want to start off with today. Europe's launching a digital euro. If you saw the thumbnail of today's image, we're going to talk about AI a little bit today. And I know some of you are still stuck on like ChatGPT 0.05 or something. And it's biased and whatever. I think it's real funny is that as I worked on today's show using AI, out of nowhere, ChatGPT referred to Christine Lagarde, who is the president of the ECB, though I had already done so, referred back to me as Euro Karen, and then made me the thumbnail that is the thumbnail for today's episode. And it is about that. That's kind of where we're coming. We're starting there because we're springing off from this bifurcation. The European Union had, and Lagarde herself, who's, again, the head of the ECB, she's like our Jerome Powell, right, announced yesterday, and you can look at the article I have linked in the show notes including listening to a video of her telling you this, that by October, Europe will have a digital euro. And when they have this digital euro, it will be something that, and the reason they're even going to take this long is because if you are a store in Europe and somebody walks in and wants to pay you with digital euros, you're going to have to take it. It will be considered legal tender. It will be mandatory. It will not be like right now. There's nothing that would stop you if you ran a store in America and somebody came in to buy your widgets from taking stable coins like Tether, USDT, or USDC, or what have you. You could do it. But if somebody came in and said, I want to pay you with Tether, or I want to pay you with US dollar coin, or what have you, and you said, no, there is no recourse. You don't have to do it. It's completely voluntary. This new thing will not be voluntary. Europe is already pretty close to being cashless in practice. This will put the death nail on that, and it won't be long before it won't be you have to take it. It's going to be you have to use it. They're basically going to, if you have a bank account in the EU, your bank account will have all your money converted into these European digital euros. And that is heading straight into not just the CBDC. It is also heading into a social credit score. That is what it's going to create. You're going to have a social credit system in Europe, much like they have in China. A central bank digital currency and a social credit system go hand in hand. There's not really a great deal of utility from a CBDC without a social credit system. And you're going to understand that because we're about to go through what the United States is going to do unless something drastically changes. It seems similar but different. I mean, the black pill people, the special libertarians and all are saying, it's a backdoor to the CBDC, man. Yeah, and in 2017, Bitcoin was a backdoor to the CBDC. There's nothing you can do with those people. I'm done. And if you're here, don't bother me. I don't have time for you today. I just don't. What we're going to get in the U.S., and I'm not going to key it up because it's like a 20-plus minute video, but Mark Moss is one of the most switched-on people in the financial and the Bitcoin space and the business space as a whole. And he just did, a 20-plus minute video. I have it linked in the show notes on the audio side for you today about something that I predicted, I said would happen. And I said it would happen almost 4 years ago the first time. I said that the United States would drag stable coins under FDIC in the banking system in some way. Exactly what that looks like, I still don't exactly know. And that this would be done for a very specific reason. The dollar is reaching the end of its sustainability in preventing runaway inflation. I know you think we have runaway inflation. We do not. We have the most stable currency in the world. We really do. Like, if you're in another place and you want to use a currency other than your own, you want ours. You want the dollar. I don't care how shitty you think it is. If you were using Turkish lira, you would switch to the dollar now if you could. If you're, you know, in various South American nations, you would switch to the dollar this second if you could. If you're in Africa, you damn sure would switch to the dollar if you could. And you would switch to this long, you know, before you go to anything, before you go to the euro or the Australian dollar or the Canadian dollar, you'd want the US dollar because it is the most stable currency in the world for now. And it's also the US global reserve currency. In other words, everybody takes it. So what I said that they would do is they would bring the stable coins under the banks and then legitimize them as actual dollars. And well, how is that different than a CBDC? A central bank digital currency is a central bank digital currency. These are individual bank currencies. Now, are they centralized? They're as centralized as JP Morgan Chase is, which means very, but it also means that you have a choice. You could use JP Morgan Chase or my little bank, Frost Bank, that's a regional Texas bank. Any of these banks will have the ability to do this if they choose to. And there's a purpose for this. And it's not to be a backdoor to a CBDC, because it won't really work that well for it if you want it to do what they need it to do. It's not that they wouldn't do it. It's not that they're nice guys. It's you have to always look at when somebody is an adversary and doing something and you think, but maybe this could be useful, why are they doing it? Well, they're not doing it to create control of the currency. They already have that. They're the banks. This is where people go sideways with their brain and it just doesn't work anymore. And this is what I mean. Well, you know what? With a CBDC, they can just shut off your money. They can do that with your fucking bank account, moron, right now. You ask the person that says that. Where's your money? Well, I got like $100 in my pocket. Yeah, okay, great, in cash. Where's your money? When you get paid on fucking Friday, where does your money go? And what service do you use to pay your electric bill and your mortgage and your car payment? And inevitably, it's a bank. And if you don't think the federal government and your state government, by the way, can find out exactly how much money you have in what bank and where, then you are dumb. They can find out like that. And if you don't think if they call up your bank, they call up the bank of holding Jake Robinson's money and say, shut off Jake Robinson's money. If you don't think they're going to do it, you're not very smart. So the whole thing with the CBDC is not about just being able to shut off the money. It's being able to control the money through circulation. And what that would be like is Jake got some money and we just decide his money's worth less than Jack's. Jack's a good guy. Jake's a pain in the ass. Jack's dollars are worth a dollar a piece and Jake's money's worth 90 cents. And that can be done either directly or indirectly. And all you got to do is look at China right now. If you have the wrong if you have the wrong credit score, you ride the shitty train and I ride the nice first class bullet train. You've actually devalued Jake's money when you won't let him on the train that I'm allowed on, which thank you, China. I don't want him asking me questions for 2 hours on the way to Beijing. Okay. I'm just picking on Jake because he's here. No questions. No questions for you, Jake. You don't get any questions today. You don't. Sorry. You won't be here when I answer them. So there's no reason. Anyway, it's about controlling the money and to the point of, when I spend this money and I spend it with Jake for some reason, I buy some dehydrated meat off him or something, and he spends it with Ken Berry, and Ken spends it with Tom, and then Tom spends it with Bill, they could actually track that exact piece of money all the way back through. It's faster to do it with a CBDC, right? It's quicker, but in the end, all those transactions, unless they're made with cash, you can already do that. When I use my bank card because Jake takes Visa, there's a bank transaction of that information, and it all can be found very, very quickly. But what you can't tell me is exactly which dollar it is. It's just a dollar. It's a like-for-like thing. But you can still follow the transactions. In other words, CBDCs are a danger. But the real danger is a social credit score monitoring system, and the CBDC is just a piece of that. The U.S. can't run it that way, not because, you know, they're all a bunch of nice guys and Trump sings in the choir and, you know, whatever, and J.D. Vance will be a president next and he'll be for 2 terms and then somebody else will, and this will go so long that they can't. No, it's not why they won't do it. Because what is their goal is what you have to understand. Well, their goal is to save the dollar. That's their goal. And they also know they cannot save the dollar forever. They know they can't. They know we have to rebase the monetary system, and they know that they don't have enough time to do it quickly. That there is going to be a lag between the start of fixing this and the point where we can say it's fixed. It's at least as good as it's going to get, and it can start to deteriorate from here, but we put a new baseline back into it. And so what is the plan? Why did I know they would do this 4 years ago? How did this redneck hippie duck farmer know this? Well, I knew it this way. I knew everything I just told you. The dollar's in trouble. It is in bad trouble in a lot of ways. There is a tremendous opportunity right now for various other nation states to perform speculative attacks on the dollar. And its weakness is It's holding on by the skin of its teeth as the global reserve currency. Okay? But if you sanction stable coins to where anybody anywhere knows that having a USDT unit one in my phone really is equivalent to having one George Washington's face on a piece of paper in my hand. And it's seen that way and it's understood that way to where it's not just poor people trying to escape their own currency, but businesses and corporations can use it. Well, that changes everything. And all of a sudden, this huge M3 money supply of dollars, which is all the dollars that exist in all forms, whether they're in circulation as cash, whether they're in a bank account or a checking account, or they're tied up in stocks, every U.S. dollar out there is part of the M3 monetary supply. If you take that supply, and even if it continues to expand, but you slow its expansion and you spread it out across the world, so instead of competing mostly for goods and services in the United States and handling international monetary wire transfers, right, if it's actually competing for widgets in France and widgets in Sudan and widgets in Japan and widgets in the Philippines and widgets in Colombia and widgets in Argentina and widgets in Canada, and basically you turn the U.S. dollar into not a global currency, but a truly globalized electronic currency, you take this horrific inflation that we're just, I mean, guys, it's like a monster trying to get in a horror movie, and it's like a tentacled monster, and the tentacles are starting to come around the door. This is like something that makes that monster spread out. Now, some of you are going to be like, well, it will never work. Okay, whatever. Or you believe too much in government. I don't believe in anything. I'm telling you what I see happening. And again, I talked about this happening 4 years before it did. What I'm saying is it is a stall. It is not a correction. It is a stall. It is a slowdown. You political people will like this. Remember your bullshit? Well, the reason I vote for Romney over Obama is Obama's driving the bus at the cliff at 90 miles an hour on a right angle, and Romney will turn it a little bit and slow it down and give me more time. Well, that was a dumb thing to say for that, because Romney was, I mean, there would have been no difference between a Romney presidency and an Obama presidency at all. Only you would have felt a little bit better about it, and the people you don't like would have felt a little bit worse about it. In practical stance, the same shit would have happened. Okay? But when we do this, this is actually a stall. This actually can work. I'm not guaranteeing you it will. I'm saying it's got a really good probability of work. Here's what it looks like. As soon as you do this, as soon as Jamie Dimon can, you know, have diamond dollars, and they're available and they can be transferred device to device all over the world, the dollar doesn't just become the global reserve currency. It becomes the de facto currency of people and companies throughout the world. Again, I know you think the dollar's got problems, and it does, but you ain't trying to hold on to Turkish lira or Russian ruples or, you know, Indian rupees or Colombian pesos. And if you were holding on to that, the dollar would look pretty fucking good. And so it will become the de facto currency almost anywhere that it's legal immediately. Businesses will use it. People will use it. Landlords will take it as payment on rent very, very quickly, wherever a country doesn't stop it. What about the countries that do stop it? It will become the de facto underground currency in almost every place that isn't legal. One way or another, people will figure out how to do it, including this will be another way that if you live in a country and you run a business and they tell you, well, you can't take, you know, Jamie Dimon diamond dollars or whatever the hell it is, right? Well, maybe you can't, but you can have a exchange account and you can just simply take euros or take francs or whatever, you know, if you're the colonial franc in Africa or whatever it is, you can take that shit and you can just change it over because you'll have access to the banking system and the banking system will have access to the stable coin. So even where Bill and his buddies are using it just for local trade. Like you might use silver coins or something. They'll be using synthetic dollars. The bigger corporation that's taking the mandated currency is going to be holding dollars and paying for its international expenses in dollars without wiring money. You understand? They're not going to have to wire money anymore. This grift and this like begging somebody to be able to send money, sometimes from yourself to yourself. I mean, there's companies that have an office in Tokyo and have an office in London, and Tokyo's cash strapped and London has lots of money. It's the same fucking company, and you want to send your own company money and you have to go through bullshit. And if somebody's pissed off, they can stop you. This takes that all away. So it's going to be the de facto global currency, both individually, corporate, and underground, all of it. That doesn't mean everybody will use it. It means a shitload of people will use it. And the plan to spread out that inflation is going to, by and large, work. Again, it doesn't mean that, you know, the band plays and everybody's happy. It just, it is what it is. And if you have a hard time with this one, and I'm taking some time with it before I move on and start rolling quicker, just again, I want you to think about the fact that me, I told you this almost 4 years ago. I looked it up. It's like 3 years, 10 months. It was the first time I said this on the air. And now it's happening. There's only one way I would know that, because there wasn't anybody to ask. And the people doing it are Trump's people, and Biden was president. But how did I see this had nothing to do with Trump directly? He just happens to be the vessel to get it done. This was inevitable, is what I'm telling you. And inflation's in fact for a time will be reduced because more hands spreading the same money over a broader pile of goods. See, what inflation is about is not just the money expanding. It's the money expands, but the production and the goods don't keep up. And then you have more units of money competing for the same amount of products and services. When you expand products and services commensurate with the monetary supply, you get a very stable situation. That's what the Fed is supposed to do. They're supposed to control inflation at 2% to slowly rip out the undervalue of your money, but at the same time not exceed the production growth of the nation. And it works pretty good right up until like production actually drops. And then you have a problem, because what government wants to do when production drops, that means people aren't working, is print more money and give it to them. See how simple that is? And then we're going to end up, United States will anyway, and many people throughout the world are going to end up in a true bi-monetary economy. Some people may end up in a tri-monetary economy. If you might be a Mexican citizen holding pesos and dollars, because at some point you might need to use pesos, and you'll hold your wealth mostly if it's not invested and it's not going to be spent for a year or three, you'll hold it in Bitcoin the way people used to hold gold. That's what's coming. And I know some of you don't want to hear that, but I'm sorry. I call balls and strikes here. So let's talk about Bitcoin. And I've got a group of bullets on Bitcoin, and we kind of leave Bitcoin after that for y'all that still are just having a hard time with this. But Bitcoin is about to become a key component in investment management, retirement accounts, etc. BlackRock's putting it in their model portfolio, right? The model portfolio is, this is what we recommend that money managers do with our funds. And they're adding Bitcoin to that model. In fact, they already have. There won't be a 401k plan you can't buy Bitcoin in another year or two, because people are going to demand it, and the people selling the ETFs are going to push it through the other side. It's already happening. I've heard from several people as their 401k plans go through, you know, annual or, you know, biannual change or whatever, all of a sudden there's either a direct option for Bitcoin or they're getting a brokerage option within their 401k, which then means anything with a ticker symbol pretty much on a standard market you can buy. ETF, individual stocks, all of it. So that it's just going to become a part of what people do. It's probably, this is going to sound crazy because it's the best performing asset of all time and bonds are boring. But it's probably going to take over first within investment management circles. It will be like the super growth and income thing. But quickly it's going to go over, it's going to start eating the bonds. Because the bond is the loser's game now, and Bitcoin is not got, you know, you're not going to see Bitcoin doing 200x in a year anymore. That's not going to happen. You'll have really great years, lackluster years, and you'll have even some down years. That's just how it is. Usually three greens to one red. And it, you know, that might change, but it hadn't yet. It just hasn't yet. Additionally, you're going to have Bitcoin remain volatile, but the volatility is collapsing to a degree. I would say collapsing is the wrong word, shrinking, and it will go up forever. Every time another corporation, you know, that can buy Bitcoin in the thousands gets involved, that becomes more sure. You have Trump's people saying, we want as much as we can get. So you might wonder why the price hasn't blown up yet. It's the same thing I told you was going to happen when they did the ETF. When the ETF launched, we were half of what we are right now. And the ETF launched and then nothing happened for a few months. And then the price took off. It always lags behind. Investors are skeptical. When Trump says we're going to do a Bitcoin reserve and says, well, we're going to start with the Bitcoin we already have, that's kind of like plop. Well, what do you do? Well, we're changing the bucket that it's in. And then we're going to put all the shit coins we've seized, you know, we're going to put them in a bucket. And eventually we'll probably sell those and buy Bitcoin with it. And we want revenue neutral ways to grow. The day the United States announces that it has acquired Bitcoin, that's the real day that this news takes off. And once you get nation states adopting it as a reserve, and by the way, there's a ton of states, individual states talking about this. It looks like it will, like several states it failed in. It looks like it will happen in Florida. It looks like it will happen in Texas. And I don't remember the other state off the top of my head. There's one more state it looks really, really good for. It just takes one to do it. That's all that it takes. And other ones then kind of have to. So it's going to go up forever. I know that's hard to believe, but it is. Now, I didn't say it would go up at 200% per annum. That's not what I said. I just said it would go up forever. In other words, and I didn't say it will never go down, but all you have to do to understand what I'm saying, if you don't want to have a mental roadblock to this, is just go pull up a Bitcoin chart since inception and zoom out to see the map. And it's a single line that goes in one direction. It already is in that mode. Okay. The next thing is that people will start to become more comfortable with it. That's already happening. People are coming to me right now saying, I bought some Bitcoin and all that. I couldn't have given you these people Bitcoin 4 years ago. And by 4 years ago, you should have known. I mean, not just because I told you, like, enough had happened 4 years ago that you should have stopped this bullshit. But now there are people they're boomers too, right? Older people coming to me and telling me, I bought Bitcoin, I've got Bitcoin. How do I, I was listening to you. I heard you say, get it off the exchange. I bought a hardware wallet. I'm afraid. What do I do? Stuff like that, like way more than any time in my history so far has been coming out with it this way. And as people get more comfortable with it, what you'll see, and I think you're going to see this in the next year, two at the latest, full capitulation by the markets, the media, even Peter Schiff. Like just, okay, it is. It's a thing now. Okay, we get it. And that will go from we surrender to everybody knew all along anyway. They'll all develop amnesia as though all of their years, if it's going to go to zero, it's vape, like it never happened. You don't believe me? Go ask a media personality right now about the real-time death counters during COVID. They don't know what you're talking about. I bet you the person that programmed the widget that made it run on your screen would tell you he doesn't know what you're talking about. That's coming for Bitcoin. Full capitulation. Like, oh, everybody knew. First they ignore you, then they mock you, then they fight you, and then you win. So full capitulation is at most 2 years out right now. Probably less. more companies, as that begins to tail out, will follow the MicroStrategy or Strategy B model, which is issuing stock, issuing bonds, issuing debt, and then taking the money and buying Bitcoin with it. Basically, what you have is the corporations have figured out that the stock market lets them function to a large degree like a bank. They can issue a fiat. This is a share in our company, and we made 800 gazillion shares. So, wow, you have 1/800 gazillionth of my company. Yay, good for you. Sell that share, which doesn't cost them anything to generate. Turn around and buy a hard asset with it. Put that on the corporate balance sheet, and some of the accounting changes that have been made allow them now to fairly mark that product to market. But yet to not have to put down the unrealized losses during a downturn. And that means it can continue to grow on their balance sheet, continue to grow their company's value, and continue to grow their ability to finance debt to themselves. So that is like, there's no way companies don't do this. And here's why. Here's why. Why do you think people that actually want sports to be competitive and to be fair and to be reasonable don't want steroids in sports? Why do you think that is? You think they're all just extremely health conscious people who care so deeply and they don't want to see their buddy Bill get sick and have a heart problem when he's 40 after he's retired? No, it's because if you allowed steroids into, let's say, football, then it wouldn't be but a few years before every single NFL player was using steroids. Because you'd get into a position where if Bill's using steroids and Jack isn't, and we're both competing for like the third string position as the tailback, then Jack's not using steroids. He ain't getting the job. At that high level of competition, if you're able to have an advantage and you take it, you will end up pulling ahead. So then the only way to keep even is that Bill and Jack both have to use steroids. Well, you're not going to regulate this out because it's property and it's become in vogue and it's become mainstream and it's just collateral. So how do you tell a company they can't do it? So once enough companies are doing it, then it becomes something that they can't not do. You have to do it too, or you're going to get clobbered. Because the more I can build on my balance sheet as an asset that is a creditworthy asset, the more cash flow I can have for business operations, and the less money I lose in retained capital. And in a competitive cutthroat world like a stock market, that just kind of writes itself from that point. And then shitcoins will continue their death spiral. I think it was about 6 years ago that I finally said, okay, no shitcoins at all. I'm done. I looked hard. I tried. I wasn't one of these obstinate, toxic maxis that just said Bitcoin only because that's the way my granddaddy did it or something. I really thought there was some other technology that would come out of the crypto space that would do something useful. And then when Lightning really started to show us what it would turn into, plus I'd seen things like, you know, it amazes me how many people today want to, do you know about Bitcoin Cash? Do you know about Roger Ver? Yeah, Roger Ver is a fucking grifter. And I was here for the block wars and you weren't, so shut up and get out of here. I don't even want to talk to people like that. Well, I read a book. They find Bitcoin 2 years ago. They read a book from a grifter and they want to tell you the history you lived. Like, it's just, that's not going to happen. And when I saw what happened with the block wars, with Bitcoin Cash, which I immediately, like, you changed. I didn't change. I called that shit, Ash Jakes here. I called that shit Bitcoin trash before it even dropped, before even people got it off the split. I was calling it trash because I knew that it was. And when I looked at all that, I eventually said, there really can only be one. There really can only be one. And then I still was like, but I can be wrong, but I just watched everything that had any promise die. And then when I said, okay, well, why did it die? It turned out none of the promises were real. Yeah, one of my favorite groups of people to mock right now, favorite groups of people. Yeah, I told Vin it was trash the day he told me it was going to be the new Bitcoin too. Anyway, but is XRP Army. The XRP people are the dumbest shit coiners that they've, like, they're actually dumber than meme coiners, because at least meme coiners don't take themselves seriously. They know it's a gamble, and they know that, you know, 1 in 1,000 meme coins will hit a little bit and maybe you can get out before it collapses. XRP actually believes their own bullshit, and the XRP people are always like, man, it's really great technology. You should look at the technology. You know what I always tell those people? Cool. Tell me about the technology. Well, let me show you this video. No, motherfucker. I don't want a video. No. You told me that it was amazing technology. I want you to explain it to me. They never know. They've listened to a video by someone that knows how to string a bunch of multisyllabic words together that they don't know, so they think he's smart, so they think, oh, that's great. It's just dog shit. And it's all going to just, it's going to just continue to erode and fall away into nothing. And what's really happened is now we're at a point where we literally have millions of shit coins. I don't mean millions of individual coins. I mean more than a million shit coins. Like Litecoin would be one. XRP would be one, right? That would be two, right? The Bitcoin Trash would be three. Bitcoin Satoshi Vision would be four. Like that. We have a million shit coins. The ability to spin these things up and milk them has just eroded to shit. And that's why you see, like, the last gas effort is going back and finding the shit coins that were super duper shit coins 6 years ago, 7 years ago, 8 years ago, and trying to resurrect them. Because the idea you're going to roll a new one out just isn't going to happen. And the only thing these people say is, well, you know, Bitcoin is old. It's a dinosaur. It's more than 15 years old in the world of computers. And how old is SMTP protocol? How old is SMTP protocol that you use to send email? It's older than Bitcoin, a lot, more than a decade. How old is HTTP protocol? Bitcoin is not a technology, it's a protocol, and we build technology off of it, right? In some ways it is a tech, but in the end it's a protocol. That's what it really is. The value of Bitcoin isn't in the code. I know you think it is, but it's not. The value of Bitcoin is in the network. The network is what gives it its value. The security, the reliability, the dependability, and the trustworthy nature of the network. And that is because of the network effect, which is the sheer volume of people participating in it in two camps, node runners and miners. And nothing else is close. Nothing else is close. Go look at the hash power of something like Bitcoin Cash and then put it on a where you have two axes on a graph, and look at its hash power compared to Bitcoin. It's flat to the ground. Do it with any of these things. They have no value from the network. As far as XRP, here's your issue with XRP for you holdouts. XRP doesn't buy Ripple. All it does is print it and sell it into circulation. Ripple's a company. Ripple is a fiat shitcoin, private fiat shitcoin, that only profits the people that issue it. And whenever they want more money, they just issue it and dump it on your market. That's all it is. That's all it'll ever be. So the shitcoins are going to go away. Moving on, though, there's a whole lot of other things here that are going to happen. And some of it is because Trump. And I think a lot of it is because Trump, he's just, now that he's here, he's the vessel whereby which it will be delivered. In other words, it would have happened anyway. Would it have happened under Cackles? I don't know, but then it would have, you know, it would have happened 4 years later. This stuff was inevitable. So we're going to see a mass. Some of it would have happened, Cackles or no Cackles, by the way. But just thank God we don't have to listen to her voice. I don't know where she went, but wherever she went, I hope she stays there. I don't want to ever hear her voice again. But there's a massive transformation coming to education, business, and economics in America. And Bitcoin's actually only a pretty small piece of it. It's just a monetary unit. One of the big things just announced, and I'm going to play this for you guys. This was something I told you about a year ago. right about a year ago, maybe 10 months ago, first time. The American National Academy is going to be an online education platform that any American can use. And I'm going to bet you that long term, anybody around the world will be able to use it. And it will be for 4-year college degrees. It will also be for computer boot camps. And my guess is that it's going to actually reach out and kind of grab up some things that already exist and bring them in, like Sailor Academy, right? Sailor Academy right now, you can get a world-class education at Sailor Academy. You just don't get any accreditation for it. You don't get any good boy stickers. It doesn't apply toward your degree or your certification. When the federal government says this, we recognize, you know, a degree from the American Academy is equivalent to a bachelor's degree from Texas Tech or Baylor, there's no one that can say that's not true anymore. And there's a huge piece to it. But I'm gonna let Orange Man talk here and explain this to you, because I think this is actually, this might be the most important thing that he'll do while he's president of the United States. And that doesn't make me an overall super Orange Man fan or anything. It's just the case. This has the ability to do more disruption to the powers that be than just about anything else that he's proposed.
I'm announcing today we will take the billions and billions of dollars that we will collect by taxing, fining, and suing excessively large private university endowments. And we will then use that money to endow a new institution called the American Academy. Its mission will be to make a truly world-class education available to every American, free of charge, and do it without adding a single dime to the federal debt. This institution will gather an entire universe of the highest quality educational content covering the full spectrum of human knowledge and skills, and make that material available to every American citizen online for free. Whether you want lectures or ancient histories or an introduction to financial accounting or training in a skilled trade, the goal will be to deliver it and get it done properly. Using study groups, mentors, industry partnerships, and the latest breakthrough in computing, this will be a truly top-tier education option for the people. It will be strictly non-political, and there will be no wokeness or jihadism allowed. None of that's going to be allowed. Most importantly, the American Academy will compete directly with the existing and very costly 4-year university system by granting students degree credentials that the U.S. government and all federal contractors will henceforth recognize. I'm announcing.
So on that, the Black Pill people came out as soon as I shared that. And well, they said, well, what happens when another president takes over? Well, that's always a risk for everything. That's always a risk for everything. But the reality is, it's going to be a really difficult thing to stop this school from coming forward and being chartered, and it will involve Congress. And in that charter, you can put certain limitations on it. Like if it's political, it better be a class about politics. If it's environmental, it has to be a class about environmentalism. And that charter then locks the framework of the school. And if you want to change the framework, you don't just need a president and a pen and a phone. You need a congressional act, which is difficult. And what's the point at that point in doing it? The other thing is that a lot of things that go into something like this are going to be recorded one time and used over and over and over again. And we don't really need a new version of a calculus class to bring something in about, you know, gender neutrality or some stupid shit like that. Additionally, I think you're going to have a massive course catalog available to you. And that means that students will be able to get their credit hours and avoid all that shit if they want to, instead of having it shoved down their fucking throat. The other thing about this, and this is something people really don't understand at all, and I mean just don't understand it, is most of the woke ideology that children or young adults pick up in college isn't directly from professors. I know there's a lot of reason to hate those people, and they are, by and large, very left-leaning, and many of them are woke as shit. But how much influence does your teacher really have over you? How much do they I mean, you'll put down the answer to get an A, but how much influence do teachers really have over students? Think back to when you were in school, and did you really change the way you thought and who you really were internally because the teacher was different than you? No. So what causes it? Did you smoke pot the first time you smoked pot? Did you do it because you saw somebody do it on TV and thought it looked cool? Or did your buddy go, hang on, it's not bad. Go ahead, just try it. Peer pressure. We take all these children, we put them in schools, we format everything toward the woke ideology. It's a victim-based ideology, so some portion of kids are going to gravitate toward it right away. They're the loudest and the most obnoxious, and the girls go to it hard compared to the men, and the boys go along because they want the girls. As long as they know what a girl is and what a boy is, and that's a problem too. But in the end, the majority of this woke ideology in our university system is propagated by the students themselves and, you know, NGOs and all these, mom demand action types and all this shit and all the Soros money and all. That has a lot more to do with it than, you know, my teacher in American literature told me that I'm wrong for being white. That's just a piece of it. So what happens when you allow all of those students to actually learn without being in the mob and without while they're what else are they doing? They're accumulating massive amounts of debt. And by the time they're like in their second, third year of college, I'm never going to be able to pay for this. Boy, I better get on track with student loan for forgiveness. Well, then I'm a Democrat, and that means I'm like all these other people. That's part of the virus. If you go into more of like a correspondence school model, then people don't necessarily become conservatives. They stay what they are to begin with. And I bet you there's, you know, 80, 90 people listening to this right now on the live stream. If I bet you every single one of you that's known young people that went off to school, and if you're, let's say you're over 40, that a perfectly mentally stable, self-respecting young person who loved their family and their parents and their country went to college, and by the time they came home for fucking Christmas break, they were a liberal retard. Do you think that would have happened if they were using distance learning, or do you think that they were surrounded by peers who were lunatics? So that will fix a lot of it right there. TN Permaculture, Mike is saying, seller accreditation is in progress. That's cool. I think you're going to see a lot of it. Jake also said that Harvard announced that their education is free online now. It's free for people that make less than $150,000, and they weren't exactly clear on what it meant. Like, if I do all the coursework at Harvard online for free, do I get a Harvard degree? Somehow I don't think that I do. But once I can, then you see the problem for everybody else. The bigger thing here is that by making a basic degree something that anybody can get at no real cost, all the rest of this system of sludge has to adapt. You can't go, you know, be in some little podunk school in rural Nebraska now, right, and charge $24,000 a year for tuition for a two-year school. And I know one that does exactly, it's a two-year private college, $24,000 a year. And you never heard of the place. It's the University of McPherson. Like, the University of McPherson is done the day this is the thing. But it will have many permutations. There'll be things like, we're looking for somebody that has this certification, and you'll be able to use it just for that certification. You're going to have more. It's not going to be expensive to develop. A lot of it's already developed. A lot of it's going to be cobbled together. Sailor Academy will probably be just incorporated into it. There will probably be partner education platforms. How will they make money? They will make money by the same way that WordPress makes money. The vast majority of people that use WordPress don't pay anything for it at all. But there's a lot of people that do very high-end development on WordPress, and they pay WordPress for expertise. Not exactly the same, but similar. You'll have, you know, private tutors and things like that. But a lot of that's going to get mitigated as well, because AI is going to continue to transform learning, but also business, leading to a small business boom. So right now, what we do, for instance, with my grandkids, when they're doing stuff with Excellus Academy, there's not an integrated AI component to Excellus yet. I'm sure there will be. And I guarantee you this American Academy, it will have an integrated AI assistant. And, but what we'll do is, like, if Braylon's struggling with an algebra problem, and I've explained it and Dorothy's explained it, we'll drop it in AI and not say give him the answer, explain it. Walk him through it until he understands it. And that's a way better tool than going to school and learning algebra from a teacher who has a class of 34 students and has 8 classes a day of 34 students. They don't have time to do that, but AI doesn't get tired. So you're going to have this educational system and paradigm working in concert with artificial intelligence, and those two will work together to accelerate learning and get people through the actual steps of learning and implementation of skill set faster. But what that means is we're going to be churning out an educated populace that's comfortable with and understands how to fully utilize artificial intelligence. This is going to create a business boom, a massive business boom. I think the next decade might be the biggest boom in small to mid-sized businesses we've ever experienced. Because anything you want to do, you're going to be able to lay out a template for how to get it done. And people like doing business with people that they know or at least have some affinity with. We've learned that from online brands and things like that to a large degree. And so people are going to be able to take this and just really, really run with it. Trump may follow through on another promise. This would actually be a really good one. This is going to be the one that's like, it's an out there that he's talking about it again. And I just asked 2 days ago, like, where are these things? He was talking about this before he was even full on running the second term. Free zones. He's talked about building 10 giant, big, beautiful, wonderful cities, because that's just how he talks. He's talking about doing this, but what he's talking about is creating kind of these economic free zones, building lots of housing. And I think people are thinking of these as like project houses, like turning, you know, the national forest into a housing project. There's a lot of land available that the federal government owns right now that could be sold to individuals to build homes on. And the cost of building those homes could be drastically less expensive without the government directly spending any money. And all you have to do to understand that is just think about some of the stuff we talked about this week. We talked about things like minimum square footage requirements. You can't build a house in my county right now. You can't build a house under 2,250 square feet as a new build. Take that away. How much does it cost to say, I don't give a fuck with the county that this is in. This is federal. We don't give a shit. There isn't a minimum square footage zone. Or even if you just said 700 feet. I know some people, it couldn't be 700 feet. If I want to live in a 10 by 10 shed, I should be able to. I agree. I don't care. I'm asking you the economic implications of having housing, and I can build it here on this side of the street, and it has to be 2,000 plus square foot, or I can build it over here, and it can be 900. If I don't have the money for this one, where am I going to build my house? Now, once young upwardly mobile people start moving to these places, they have to come from somewhere, and it takes pressure off housing in other places. It starts to push the cost of housing down. You see how that works? How much money did the government spend to do that? I mean, they'll spend some, but in the end, you can sell enough property to pay for it. Now, what else can we do there? You can take a whole shitload of regulations that have to be followed right now, and what we talked about this week. Most of those regulations are not federal. Most of those regulations aren't federal. Most of those regulations are state, county, and local. So if you just strip all those regulations off, it actually costs less for the government because they don't have to put propeller-headed pocket protector wearing pain in the ass department of making you sad inspector fucks that don't do anything useful for anybody bothering people, so you don't have to pay them. You don't have to pay them. So it costs less. So if you do this, this is the one I'd love to see it. I am not highly confident that it'll happen. I would give it a 4 to 5 out of 10 of it happening. But if they can pull that off at the same time you're rolling out a free government college that can be attended from anywhere with an internet connection, you have an opportunity here to set things on fire like you've never seen economically, in a good way, for once. There's also little cottage industries that are going to continue to just boom. And the more freedom you have, the more they can boom. And that's both economic and regulatory freedom. And it seems like we're at a point right now where it is Trump doing it, and it's why the left is shrieking about it, because if he's doing it, it must be bad. But let me tell you something that's going to be hard for some of y'all to swallow. There's no way it would have happened with Cackle. She's just too fucking stupid. But let's say a Democrat who you could see winning and being a populist became president of the United States. RFK Jr. Somebody hasn't left the fold yet, or someone before they left, Tulsi Gabbard. Josh Shapiro, the governor of Pennsylvania. I'm not endorsing him. Don't be stupid. Just relax. Let me say, imagine that happened. I'll bet you if Josh Shapiro was doing a lot of things that Elon Musk and Doge, along with Trump, are doing right now, there'd be a lot of Republicans screaming the high heaven that it's terrible. Because it's the other side doing it. Even if it's what you want, well, I can't have him doing it. It's got to be a problem. So we have that problem right now. But Democrats want clean food, too. I know that's hard to believe. I'm not talking about the purple-haired ones that don't know what a woman is. I'm telling you, there's a shitload of people that aren't exactly in love with Musk and Trump and Vance and everybody else. But they would love to be able to buy food grown where they are. And they're not for guzzling seed oils and whatever. They're not completely reactionary people. There's a lot of people in the middle. And when I say the middle in this way, some of them are right, some of them are neutral, some of them are left. What I mean by middle is they're not to any extreme. They're just, please leave me alone. Please leave me the fuck alone. Leave my kids alone. Let me do my job. Let me go home at night and let me eat food that doesn't suck. That's all they want. Like, actually, the vast majority of Americans I just described, just, will you leave me alone? Most people that have gotten political, they only got political because they felt that nobody would leave them alone, or they were agitated like the college-age kids or whatever, or they were put in a massive debt and they told your only solution is to follow this side. Yeah? Otherwise, most people just want to be left alone. So, like, clean food movement, movement toward animal-based diets, et cetera, that's going to explode. It's going to keep growing. And it has grown massively, massively over the years. And when I say over the years, I mean like the last 5, 6, 7, 8 years. Because almost everybody knows somebody right now who used to be a fat ass that took this approach. And even if the person that knows that person's not full all in yet, you're like, well, yeah, well, he looks really good. He looks really good. You know, I had a guy recently on X. It was this week. But I said something about, if anybody tells you that red meat isn't good for you, don't listen to them about anything. And he said, yeah, I'd take one look at you. I would take one look at you, and I would never trust you for diet and nutrition advice. And so I'm like, bro, I don't know who you are, but you have a generic profile with no picture on. I put myself out there, 3 days a week in a live stream. Where are you at? And I posted a picture, a fairly recent picture of me with my shirt off standing outside. My wife had given me a haircut, and I ain't got no shirt on. And I damn sure don't look like a GQ model. I don't look like freaking, Sean Baker or nothing. But I'm 53 years old. I look pretty fucking good for 53 years old. And 7 years ago, I was 285 pounds. And today I'm 205 pounds. I wear a size 34 jean. If I don't wear my fucking belt that falls off my ass, This you can't, it's like permaculture in a way. You can't say it doesn't work because here it is. I'm not training every day. I'm not trying to be a big muscle guy or something like that. But I went from 285 to 205, and most people with that amount of weight loss would have to then go to a doctor and have skin flaps cut off their body. And I didn't. And by the way, I was 187 pounds when I got out of the Army, when I was barely 21 years old, and I was, you know, in the United States Army Airborne, and I was training every day. So I don't know what you expect me to weigh with my frame and my height at 53, but it damn sure ain't 170 pounds if I weighed almost 190 at that point. I'm about 15 pounds away from where I was when I got out of the Army. And I don't train real hard, and I don't work out real hard. I walk around my property. I do my garden work and stuff. I hit the heavy bag a little bit. That's about it. I'm happy with that. And so everybody knows somebody like that at this point. And a lot of people that have done it and fallen off, they still know it works. So there is a hunger right now for things like non-GMO foods, for things like absent any kind of seed oils and things like that, to eat lower carbohydrate, better, higher quality meats. That's going to be a boom of itself. And the reality is we have so much land to do it with in this country. It's unbelievable. It's unbelievable. We could stop putting ethanol in gas tanks. And with that one move in the land that it would free up, we could drive the cost of meat in this country down to where it would cost you less to eat beef than broccoli. Because it's easier to grow beef by the pound than broccoli by the pound. It just is. It just is. So there's going to be a lot of movement in that. Health and fitness will return as a true value in America. Remember, it wasn't that long ago we used to say things like, well, at least you have your health. You haven't heard that much recently, have you? Don't you remember? Like, I remember back in the 80s and 90s, I remember hearing people say that all the time. Like, a person would come in a bad way, right? They would come in a bad way. They lose a job and get a divorce, and their wife took their kids away, and their dog died, and they lost their record collection and wrecked their car. And somebody would say, but at least you still have your health. And then in the end, you'd be like, yeah. You know why I stopped saying it? Because most people are fat as fuck now, and they're not healthy. Most people that are 50, most people my age are on at least 3 to 4 pharmaceutical drugs, and if they were to be honest with themselves and go to their doctor and go, when will I stop taking these? Their doctor goes, well, either never, or when the drug company comes out with a better drug to replace this one, maybe then. But usually what happens, they come out with a new drug, you add it, and now you have another one for the rest of your life, whatever's left. I think we're heading toward a point, not for everybody, but for a lot of Americans, where like a true goal is going to be health. And, you know, it's already the case. I know there's a lot of younger people that are fat and all, but in the end, most younger people are already thinner than most older people. As we age, the longer we don't take care of ourselves, the more our metabolism becomes fucked up and the fatter we get. But the other side of it is, you know, if there's a 22-year-old guy and he's, you know, borderline on attracting chicks, like, he's not going to have plastic surgery and become a model. Right. He's not going to do that. You know, if he's a 7 and he's trying to hook up with a chick that wants at least a 9, he's got a problem. But what's he going to? He goes to the gym. He works out. He builds a body. And even if he still doesn't quite have the face, he goes up in value. Right. So there's a value to that, to the opposite sex. So people pursue it. But once we get married, we get older, we get lazy. The doctor tells us it happens to everybody. We stop valuing that. That's the group I'm talking about. People, as they age past that vanity stage, will start really caring about their health again and their fitness and their appearance and things like that. Geopolitics are going to come into this as well. I think U.S. relationship with Europe is going to continue to weaken. And I'll tell you, the truth of the matter is Ukraine is an aggravating circumstance. It's not why. Europe has decided to go full socialism. Honestly, Europe in 5 years will probably be more socialist than the Soviet Union was in 1985. That is just the direction that they're headed. Our values and as people are drastically different than the values of people in Europe. People in Europe have stopped questioning anything. There is a strong right-wing movement there, but I don't think it's big enough to get enough momentum to take over. I hope I'm wrong about that. I don't want to be right about this. I would love to see like another 4 or 6 years, you know, enough elections happen in Europe that we're turning the tide enough. But, you know, the little countries where it tries to happen, like Romania just now, they just like guy was going to win the presidency of Romania. Total right winger. They just took him off the ballot and said, nope, can't vote for him. Nope, can't do it. We're just he's going to win. Nope. No, he's not. Right. We can't have good relations with essentially a country. You got to think of the EU as a single monolithic country. It's in a lot of ways what the United States was supposed to be, except with a bunch of socialism mixed into it. And so I think there's just this natural divorce happening between the United States and Europe. And the only people that really seem to like what Europe's doing are all our stupid young people that think healthcare is a human right and a man can become a woman and a woman can become a man and all this crazy nonsense. And if they like Europe, let them go there. Let them go there. Let them get raped by North African migrants, and maybe they'll come back and appreciate what they have. That's all I can say for those people. But we're going to continue to see that split grow, very, very grow, much so. And at the same time, a nation that, you know, right now it's really hard for you to see it, and it's hard for anybody that's not a fan of Trump to accept it, because Russia must be bad because Trump likes Russia and I have to hate what Trump likes. Reality. But I'm telling you, I've known enough Russian people. The values of the average Russian are far more consistent with the values of the average American than the average European. I'm telling you right now, it is the case. Russians are very patriotic people. They love their country. I know you love yours and they love theirs, but they do. They're incredibly patriotic people. They have a huge value that they place on hard work. They are very charitable people internally. In other words, they worry about their next door neighbor probably better than we do, especially if you get outside of the major cities like in any country. They have a very heavy, historically strong agricultural root like we do. They have a big country. They have a lot more opportunity to become something great than where they are right now. Europe is played out. I mean, you have to think back in time to really understand this. Why did Europeans come to North America? Because they wanted to just subjugate Native Americans and black people. If you're a 19-year-old college student, maybe that's your answer. But the reality was because all the forests were cut down. The streams were polluted. Fishing was played out. The game was gone. You couldn't own any land. The land that was available for things like livestock, and it was all owned by the kings and the nobles. People left Europe in the 15, 16, 17, and 1800s because it was already burned out, and it hasn't gotten that much better since then. I'm just sorry it hasn't. Come here to America and realize what's available to a person. I'm talking right now, if you're in another country and you can legally get here to the United States and you can show up with as little as, let's say, $50,000 U.S. dollars, there are places you can move in this country and you can buy a place to live right now out of pocket for that. Maybe you wouldn't want to live there, but the person coming from another country would think this is the greatest thing that ever happened to them in their life. And those are the people that come here and they within one generation, they're multi-generational wealth and they're multi-millionaires. Because they see what you don't see. You were born here and you take it for granted. And you're not willing to take a step back to take a step forward. I don't mean you individually. I'm not picking on anybody. I'm saying that's how we are. But that's a lot more like how Russia is than the United States. I asked John Willis on our Tuesday coffee chat, if you woke up tomorrow and somebody had a gun in your mouth, you have no choice. You're going to be dropped off in one of two countries. Somewhere in a rural part of the country, too, where nobody, you know, nobody's shooting at you or anything. And you will be handed paperwork that you can stay there, you can live, you can work, you can build a business, you can do what anybody who was naturally born there can do. You're either going to wake up in Ukraine when they put you to sleep, or you're going to wake up in Russia. Where do you want to wake up? And John said Russia. Didn't even think about it. And I agree. And if you don't, you watch, in the words of Mr. Miyagi from the 1980s movie, you had too much TV, Danielson. You had too much TV. If you actually look at the, like, what's going on in those countries, you don't want anything to do with Europe. And Ukraine is part of Europe at this point. Even if they're not in the EU, they're still part of Europe. So we will see relationships at a national level improve with Russia to a large degree. And to a lesser degree with China. We have to balance that very carefully. The type of trade we'll have with Russia will be macro level trade for raw materials and things like that. The type of trade that we have with China right now is like everything that we need, including like the ability to make antibiotics. We can't have that continue. So what you'll see is a more moderate take with China as we get through this trade war, but a much stronger relationship with Russia. And I think you'll see a much stronger relationship with a lot of the more stable countries in Central and South America as well, which, by the way, culturally are a lot more like us than Europe. And for all this talk, like, I really wish Trump would shut up about the 51st state. There's no point to it. It's not going to happen. It's not doable. And honestly, anybody that loves Trump, anybody that wants conservative values, anybody that's right wing, anybody that's a one degree right of center shouldn't want that either. You got, you know, first of all, as big as it is, it probably wouldn't be a state. It'd probably be two, at least. Now you've got four Democrat senators for all eternity added to it, and a huge population, tens of millions of people, that voted themselves into leftism. I don't get it. It's not going to happen. It wouldn't be good if it did. I have to come back to, I guess Orange Man is playing at, I'm going to be so aggressive and so off the chain and so off the hook that when we get USMC 2.0, it'll be better and they'll have to stick to it or something. I wish he would shut his freaking fat mouth about that. I really do. It is dumb. It is absolutely stupid. And so I think we're going to actually see some kind of new trade deal with Canada, but I don't know how much we're going to cozy up to him. The reason behind it is all about defense. It's all about defense. And as I'm saying, if you're able to look 10, 15, 20 years in the future, probably the bigger threat to us militarily than Russia is Europe. Europe's talking about stealing $11 trillion of its own citizens' money to rebuild and rearm. Read a history book. Europe is the center of every major conflict in the world for hundreds of years. For hundreds of years. Without Europe, there'd be a hell of a lot less war out there. Even wars that happen in other parts of the country, when you go back in time, what caused the American conflict in Vietnam? France. I'm not going to explain it to you. If you don't know, go look it up. The French caused the Vietnam War with America. Now, we were dumb enough to get sucked into it, but without the French colonial bullshit in Vietnam, the 58,000 men that died whose names are on a black wall in D.C., those names wouldn't be there, and those people would still be here. So even when a U.S. Asia conflict has its roots in Europe. Europe has been the genesis of the most war that's happened in modern times. And when I say modern times, I'm talking several centuries. And I defy anybody to prove that wrong. Even the horrible things that happened, like Mao Zedong in China and all the people that he killed in China. That's China killing Chinamen. That's internal politics. That's internal horror, but it still is. It wasn't China taking over Mongolia, was it? And that's hard to hear, but I think we're going to have okay relationship with Canada, okay relationship with China, and a very strong long-term relationship going forward with Russia once we get past this Ukraine bullshit. Next, Greenland. I think I know what he's doing with Greenland. I don't think we ever think Greenland's going to be a territory of the United States. I think for the United States to get the relationship with Greenland that Trump and his people envision, what you have to have is a completely free and independent Greenland. The problem for Greenland is that Greenland can't be afford to be completely free and independent right now. But what you could end up with is, instead of the U.S. seeing Greenland as a territory, something like Puerto Rico, what you may have it be is more like a protectorate. In other words, they would sign some type of a treaty with us, and that would obligate us to do far more than defend them. Defense is not the problem for the Greenland population. It's economic development. There's not a lot of big, giant green fields in Greenland. It's not a place that's really cool to just go hang out, but there's a lot of wealth there, and they don't have the ability to develop that wealth without somebody willing to pay the bills. So I think that that's going to end up being, by the end of the Trump administration, Greenland will be a free, independent nation, completely severed from Denmark, and it will then have some sort of formalized treaty relationship with the United States of America, but it will not be a territory or a state. And I don't think there's any intention to do that. And what's being said about Greenland makes sense. When Trump says it, I may not agree with it, but I understand it. I don't understand the 51st state thing. It doesn't make any sense to me. Who knows? Maybe I'll be surprised. The future's bright, but I also want you to understand this is not a white pill show. Some of the things that are going to go on as this happens, number one, the education system will get full on violent. I mean, nobody burns shit down like a bunch of pissed off, angry, spoiled, rotten college students. And they'll get violent that way. But the Harvard can say whatever they want about we're going to make it available for free or whatever. When it comes down to it, when they start to realize that this new educational paradigm is going to have thousands of colleges with very high paid professors close their doors permanently, they're not going to go without a fight. There's going to be a massive amount of resistance. I can't even begin to think of the propaganda that's going to come out. There'll be studies that show that people that spend too much time learning at home become introverted people that set bombs off in Unabomber shacks or something. That kind of shit, they're going to push back in every way that they can on just the educational piece because it's such a big, huge piece of, I wanted to say value, but it's not a value. It's a monetary gain, but it's poor value. A student today that spends, I don't know, $25,000 a year for 4 years to get a degree, if it's not like a high-end medical degree or something like that, they just got ripped off. They will never get the real value that they put into it back, especially when you look at the cost, because it won't cost them $100,000. It's going to cost them 4 years of their life and $100,000 financed over 20, 25, 30 years. And so it's going to cost them $300,000-$400,000 plus 4 years of lost opportunity when they could have been working while they were learning. And I can see as this actually takes root, like I'll hire you and I'll say, but you're lacking certain educational criteria. If you'll commit, you start working here at this price, and you meet the objectives that I give you, plus per quarter you complete X amount of the education I want you to have to become better, then here are your metrics for raises. See, and I can't do that if you're going to the University of Dipwapville. Because I can't, you're going to school over here, you're working over here. I literally can hire you as a condition of contract that you're going to actually take your coursework and you're going to work on your coursework 1 hour a day while you're at your desk. And I'm going to be able to log in as your employer and see your progress, your grades, all of it. And I'm also going to be monitoring your progress at your job as well. And if that is an incredible threat to the existing system, and so they will do everything they can to disrupt it, right down to this kind of dirty shit, reaching out to key alumni in key hiring positions and say, don't hire these people. They will reach out. They will use all their little ties, and they'll reach out and say, well, maybe the federal government recognizes it, but, you know, I don't know, Google won't, at least at first. That's going to happen. Globalists will try to backfill CBDCs into the United States. When people say that the stable coins under the banking system will be CBDCs, again, the people saying that say that about everything that they don't like. Just special people I can't help. But the real point of the CBDC is the social credit score. And you can enact the social credit score without the CBDC. The CBDC just makes it easier. And if you can get the banks to play along, you can create it as a backdoor. But it's the social credit monitoring system. And so that's going to be a real threat no matter what form the money takes. If you've never seen, what is it, the Black Mirror, Black Mirror is the episode on the social credit score system, you really should watch it. You really should watch it. If you're going to watch Black Mirror, it's a British, kind of like a modern version of Twilight Zone. I will just tell you that you probably should skip episode one. I made the mistake. I got my wife to agree to watch it, and now she won't watch any more episodes. Episode one is where the guy has to have sex with a pig. And it really isn't that good of an episode. I think the second one's the one with the stationary bikes, and they're all machines, and they're generating power for society. That'd be a good one. But the one on a social credit system, that's exactly what they're trying to do. And that is going to be a threat no matter what kind of money we use. It's going to be a threat. Because if you can't get into an apartment because you're not good enough to rent that apartment, it doesn't matter what you're paying with. And so that will continue to be a thing. And the globalists want the CBDCs. That is their ultimate goal in life as far as controlling the populations of the world. Many midlifers are going to get steamrolled by all of this if they don't start adapting fast. We've got three primary segments of society, really four. You got little bitty kids. They're going to adapt because they're going to grow up with it. But just take those out, and you've got young people, you know, people like my grandson's age up to about, you know, 30 years of age. They have plenty of run-up time with this. And they're going to adapt to it like the young babies are because it's going to be in front of them and they're not afraid of technology. And then the second group is in the middle. We'll leave them go. And the third group is old fucks like me, older than me, about, you know, the youngest being my age and then older, that if you're in that group and you've got your retirement worked out at this point and you really could walk away, maybe you're going to work another 5-7 years, but you really don't have to, but you could, you can probably ignore most of this and you can be okay. The people in the middle, the people that are going to be like 48 and still needing to work for another 10, 15 years, and you don't learn how to use all this stuff, you're going to get destroyed. You're going to get, unless you're a farmer or something, you're going to get destroyed. And there's right now you have plenty of time to adapt to this. But what's going to happen is that window is closing, 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 closing. And it seems like it's moving at just this very steady speed. And when it gets down to where it's about 30% from being fully closed, it's going to seem like it's going to gradually then suddenly, right? Overnight is what it's going to feel like. And once you're far enough behind that, you're not going to be able to catch up. And there's going to be a lot of people that that's going to happen to. It's going to remind you of the 70s and early 80s. There were a lot of people in their 40s and 50s that never recovered from that. And they were people that when they were 30, they had a good job on construction or they had a good job in a steel mill and they did not adapt during the flux period. They just assumed, well, one day they'll open the mill back up. One day I'll get called back to work, whatever. And they didn't. Or when they went back to work construction, all the people around them were 20 years younger, working twice as hard and paid half of what they expected to be paid. And that's what they were getting too. And we have a real danger of that happening right now. The tax system will prove very difficult to fix, maybe impossible. Trump is talking about doing some really great things to free people up with a tax burden. But the tax problem in this country, the two biggest tax problems we have are not income tax. Income tax, as unfair as it is a reflection of earnings, and therefore the people that pay the most earn the most and have the most left over to do something with. And the people that that scrape to get by already don't pay shit for income tax. Most people listening to me, you know, if you're not a six-figure earner, you're not paying much income tax to begin with. And if you make $50,000 as an individual, you're not paying shit for income tax. If you are a married couple making $70,000, $80,000 a year, you have two kids, you ain't paying shit for income tax. You're paying some. But the percentage of, like, if you look at all the taxes you pay, it's probably the smallest one. The most problematic taxes that we have in this country right now are property taxes. Won't somebody please think of the children? We need schools, right? Okay, and that's how we keep that running. And the manipulation and things like building restrictions and all exasperate that. But I rent, and you're paying property tax. The people that rent and think they're not paying property tax, you're a special kind of stupid. So here's what I'm going to do. Let's say I buy another house and I say, I'm going to rent my house at Nine Mile Farm. I'm going to rent it to Jason, right? Jason, you get to rent my house. Here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to charge Jason enough money to cover my mortgage and my insurance and basic maintenance on the home. But Jason, don't worry. I'm such a nice guy. I'll pay the property tax out of pocket. Is anybody dumb enough to actually think that's how it works? What do? I put all the shit in. I look at the margin I want to make. I add that on top of it. And Jason pays my property tax for me. I might write the check, but Jason pays it. How simple is that to understand? So the property tax is a huge problem. This is not something that can be fixed by the federal government unless these opportunity zones address that somehow and create a competitive market where these larger municipalities start having exodus. They might figure something out then. I don't know. But what's the biggest tax most people pay on your earnings for the largest portion of your life? The Ponzi scheme known as Social Security. I have no idea how we unwind from this. None. Back when Bush Jr. was president, he had a proposal to allow you to take 1/6 of your Social Security and have options to invest it other than just being in a Social Security fund. Just 1/6 that you could maybe buy government bonds, right? Because the government bond, a boring government bond, is better than Social Security for you. And if you could have added any sort of additional investment to that, by now, I mean, a lot of you guys were around when Bush was president, so you don't realize exactly how long ago that was, but Bush was, you know, took over in 2000. That's 25 years. If he could have got that implemented in his first 100 days, which was the goal that he failed at, we would have 25 years of anybody who was working at that point having 1/6 of their Social Security in a separate management funnel, right? That would be, and they would at this point, a lot of those people would be realizing in another 10 years when they retire, 15 years when they retire, I'm going to get more money out of the 1/6 than I am out of the 5/6. If that was in place right now, you would have this massive push to keep shifting more of it over. At this point, there are so many people that cannot see a way out, and they realize whatever they get in Social Security is not going to be enough, but at least they have it, and they really don't want to let it go. Go talk to a boomer right now and say, look, man, I understand that you need to keep your Social Security, and I will do everything that I possibly can to make sure nobody touches your Social Security, but I'm 35, and it won't be there when I retire. Help us change this system with a guarantee that you'll get yours until you die. And you know what they say? Don't touch my Social Security. You can't even have the conversation. I don't know how we get out of those two things. The property tax, it's so decentralized in some ways with the power of monopoly on it. I don't know how we get out of it. Without chartering more than 10 new cities, I don't know how we get out of it. The Social Security thing, guys, it has to go bankrupt, I guess. And that may not be good for people my age. It really might not be good for you if you're 40 right now. But I tell young people, just pretend that your Social Security money was stolen and it's never coming back and you're never getting anything. Build your retirement plan without it there. And then if you're getting $1,600 a month or something, it's gravy. But if you depend on it, I think you're going to get hurt. I think you're really going to get hurt bad by it. Another thing I think is going to happen is we're going to have – oh, I skipped one here. I wanted to say something. Part of this, I think we're going to have a major surge. This was in my last grouping. We are going to have a major surge in nuclear power in this country, or we're fucked. We can't burn enough gas to make enough energy for the requirements of power that are coming. So there could be some hope in that too, not just with cheaper energy, but in lots of jobs. And we have technology that we can build nuclear power generation with now. The only people say it would take 10 years if they started right now and went as hard as they can. It would be 10 years before the first watt came out of it, only because of regulation. Only because of resistance. We could be building relatively small-scale, extremely safe thorium reactors, and from the day we broke ground, if we cleared the shit out of the way, the day we broke ground to the day they started cranking out power would be about 2 years. So we'll see. And what makes monoliths change and do something like that when they don't have a choice anymore? And I think that we're getting there. And then, you know, big food, big medicine, big media, they're all going to rage against all reforms as well. They already are. I mean, you notice that for all, like all those years, RFK Jr., you know, the Children's Defense Network, all the books that he wrote, how soft it's been since he took over HHS, how quiet it's been. That's because for him to even get in there, he had to make certain agreements to get the votes necessary to get in. And how will there be a point where he pushes back the other way and says, aha, I'm in now, fuckers? I don't know, but it's very clear to me that he made certain deals to be able to get in the door. And so far, at least, he's keeping those deals. So we're going to have major pushback there, too. What should you do? One, if you don't like AI, I don't care. Shut the fuck up and learn to use it. If you don't learn to use it, again, especially if you're under 50, and if you're under 40, really, I don't care how many times you watch Terminator and you don't you think that AI is actually intelligent. It's not. It's a tool. You're ignoring a tool. You are a person in 1910 saying the Model T is dangerous and you're keeping your horse. That's what you are, except the person that does that in 1920 can still just go buy a car. AI is not a car. It's not as simple as a car. It takes time to learn how to use it. And as it develops, the person that's been using it for 5 years, when the new features are developed, they pick them right up and they go. The other person has to start at the beginning. And they're, you know, I mean, it's any technologies like that. You know, I mentioned WordPress earlier for blogging. I think WordPress is the easiest platform to use in the world because I've been using it for over 20 years. When I set up my stuff, when I add a page, whatever, I mean, I fly through it. I can multitask while I'm doing it. You sit down and you've never used WordPress before, and I'm talking the full hosted version of it, you're fucking lost. Install a plugin. I don't know what that means, you know? It's click a button, but you got to know what plugin, what to do with it, how to configure it, why you want it in the first place. Should you buy the paid version of it? Is there a free version? Does the free version suck? What is the free version? Like, there's so much just to plugins, let alone day-to-day operations, but I can fly through it. I'm telling you, you're going to be competing against people who can fly through the use of AI. So shut up and learn to use it. Determine what you want to be doing for the rest of your working years and start moving that way now, if it's a valid path. Because some of these jobs are just going to go away. They really are. Like, I would not be going into the business of being a teacher right now if my path toward being a teacher was I'm going to go to college, I'm going to go to school for 4 years, I'm going to get a teaching certificate, and I'm going to go teach at, you know, Fort Caroline Elementary School. It is not a growth business. Population's in decline, and the migration out of the system is heavy already. If I wanted to be a teacher right now, I would say, how do I become a teacher that makes a lot of money? It would be money-motivated teaching. And even if you don't go all the way to that level, at least you'll go to somewhere that's specialized enough. I would, you know, teaching, there's a lot of different ways to teach. There's a lot of different things to teach. That's all I'm saying. You need to be moving in the direction of what you want to do for the rest of your life now, because there will be like a mousetrap moment where making that shift, and there's two of them. There'll be a societal shift where at your age, if you're not already there, it's very hard to get in. So if you're 15 years old, you'll be all right. But if you're 30 years old in the next 5 years and you're 35 and you're still outside of where you want to be, it may become very difficult to get in to where you want to be. So you need to start heading in that direction at least now. And that's good. A lot of this is good advice anyway. You should be stacking Bitcoin daily. Daily, you should buy Bitcoin. I don't care if it's a dollar. Well, I can't buy it every day, Jack, but I can buy, you know, $30 a month, then you can buy a dollar a day. You'll be better off doing it that way. Just trust me. I've done the math. I've worked it out. I figured out what happened if you bought Bitcoin on the worst possible day ever for a 5 year period. And the answer was there was actually a day, not a lot of them, but there was a day you could have gone all in and 5 years later you were still down. But if you had bought it monthly starting on that day, you were up something like 197% with the same spend over the same time. When you go daily, that becomes more. It also changes the way you think. Trust me, I've always bought Bitcoin every month and fairly large amounts of it. And when I started buying small amounts daily, it changed the way that I thought about the whole thing, and it made me more dedicated than I already was. So when you, and this is why I like the daily thing. When somebody tells me, well, I can't do it, I guarantee you, I sit down and talk to you and I'll find out somewhere between $5 and $10 worth of bullshit you don't need. You spend money on a daily basis. And then all I'll say is I want you to do a magic trip through time. I want you to go back 10 years and I want you to imagine you took your $5, your $10, whatever that number is, and you'd started doing it 10 years ago. And what would you have now? And what do you want more? Your fucking Starbucks and your avocado toast or whatever it is for you, your pack of cigarettes, whatever it is, your bottle of booze, whatever it is. Would you rather keep doing that, or would you rather have that right now? Because 10 years is coming whether you do or not. So stack. And if not Bitcoin, stack something of value, but there's not a better choice right now than that for what's coming. Be prepared to move. Be prepared to move. The younger you are, the more that needs to be true. There's going to be real opportunities. Whether it's these opportunity zones or not, I don't know. But there are going to be geographic arbitrage opportunities. There's going to be opportunity arbitrage opportunities, okay? There's going to be a lot of things in the coming years that the best way to make the most use of them is going to be to pick up and go somewhere. So think about your life in that way. How do I make sure that if I need to move, I can? And again, the older you are, the less important that is, right? And generally speaking, it's young people can just pick up and move. I got out of the Army. I was barely 21 years old. I took a walk. I went back to my hometown after a couple months of being on a trail and looked around and said, I don't like it here. I had a friend in Texas. He said, come down and visit. I did, and I stayed. It didn't take any real effort. I loaded up my fucking car, and I drove away. You know, if I go 10 years past that point, let's see, I would have been 31. Okay, so I was working probably for Microtest or Fluke. I would have been working for Fluke. I was a VP of sales. And the reason I ended up moving from where we were living then is I lost the job. Had I not lost that job, that would have been a very hard job to walk away from. And I'm a very adaptable person. And, you know, at that time in life, I had a personal corporate recruiter that when I'm like, yeah, I want to do something else, he picked up a phone. Most people won't ever have that. And if, let's say, I had kept the job I had before that, worked for a company called GarrettCom. I was selling industrial computer hardware right here in Texas. And if I had never left that job and I had stayed there, by the time I was 31, I would have been in that job about 7 years. And I had a mortgage and debt and everything else. And if you, you know, I didn't go to college. Imagine you were carrying student loan with all that shit and you were typecast because of your degree. It gets really hard to move. And it is, old people can easily move if they want to. And young people, it's middle age, you get stuck. So think about staying somewhat mobile, capable if the opportunity comes along, and be looking for the opportunity to fit the availability as well. Get fit, get healthy, eat right. I won't say any more than that because that's good advice no matter what. But it's going to become more important as the cost of healthcare continues to go up. You know, you hear all these things, they're going to come up with this drug and you're going to take it. It's going to add 10 years to your life. Maybe you won't be able to afford it and you ain't going to live 10 extra years if you're dying of freaking kidney failure from your type 2 diabetes either. So we do need to individually decide, you know, you don't have to be a GQ model, like I said about myself, but you need to be able to get up, to move, to do things, to function. Take care of your fucking self, please. That will drive down your cost of health care, which will drive down your cost of insuring yourself, which will give you more money for your retirement, and you'll be healthy enough to enjoy it. I'll leave it at that. Either build a business or build a side hustle. And if you're not going to do that, you better start treating your job mentally like you're an individual contractor, like you're an independent contractor. You need to see yourself, and this is good, again, this is good advice for any time, but it's more important now than it was 20 years ago. You, Inc. You need to always be thinking to yourself, if I lost this job, where would I go? Who would I work for? What would they pay me? Would they pay me more than I get paid right now? If they would, why am I still here? Maybe I should talk to them before I need to talk to them to see, for two reasons. One, they might say, hell yeah, we'll pay you more. We'll pay you more. Yeah, you want more? We'll give you money. And maybe you go take the money. Maybe they'll say, hey, we don't want you. And then all the places you thought you could go if you lost your job, when you lose your job, you can't go there because they never wanted you and you didn't know because you never talked to them. Or you might go talk to them and say, well, we would want you, but here's the things you don't have. Maybe you need to go get those things. Probably other people that you would go to would want them as well. You need to always be thinking, what's my next gig? I don't care if you think you're going to work for another 20 years where you are. There's no reason to believe they're going to ever fire you. There's no reason to believe your industry's ever going to go into a downturn and you think you're going to be fine. Even if you're right, you need to be at least looking and prepared so that you understand the situation that you're in. You need to treat yourself like the way your employer sees you. You might think your employer thinks, man, I really love this person and I'm loyal to them and I'm going to take care of them. You might work for a small company and emotionally the owner may feel that way about you right up until he can't pay his fucking bills. If I am sitting, you know, there is a time as an owner in a company that I cut my salary versus cutting the salary of my employees. It did happen. I did it for about 4 months. It was a business I was a co-owner in, and I owned several other companies, but I paid myself through this one. And my partner came to me and said, you need to take $30,000 out of that business unit for about a quarter. You'll be able to put it back in, but right now we don't have enough revenue. We've looked at the plans and the projections, and one business is coming in, and we don't have it. And I had a pretty small company. I had about 6 people working for me, and basically I could have just got rid of any one of about half of them. About 3 of them I needed. 3 of them were useful, but I didn't have to have them. Could have fired one of them. I could have took $5,000 out of everybody's pay. I could have took my highest paid person and maybe took seven and just proportioned it out. I could have load shared and taken the pay from me too. And I looked at what everybody was doing and I talked to everybody and I interviewed everybody and I asked them about how they were working on their value. And I ended up going back 2 days later and said, I've really thought about this, Neil. I won't miss it for a quarter. I'll be fine. I have other income. Take it out of my pay. And he my jaw about hit the floor. He couldn't believe I said that. Are you sure? I'm like, yeah. He goes, you don't want to take maybe half of it and let them take you? No. And I also went back and told those guys what I did for them. And I said, if any of you let up at all, I'll just fire your fucking ass and take my payback. Because then everybody else can get, you know, still have theirs. Do you know what I am in doing that? I'm a fucking unicorn. I'm a fucking unicorn. You will never fucking work for somebody that does that for you. I've never met another person who ever did it. Neil's worked with hundreds of people like me. He never met anybody else that ever did it. I can't to this day tell you exactly why I did it, other than it was the right thing and I could. It almost never happens. It almost never happens. Jason said he was laid off at Christmas one year because the owner wanted to buy a Christmas for his kids. I lost a job between Christmas and Thanksgiving and Christmas one time, a good one, the one for Fluke. They didn't give a fuck when they let me go. They didn't give a fuck that I moved over 1,500 miles to take the job. They didn't give a fuck that I didn't go to work for them in the first place, and I went for the work for a competitor that they bought out. They didn't care that I was the number one person in the company from a regional sales position. They cared that they had had to downsize again, and that they had people that had been in the company longer that they actually saw as one of us, and I was not one of us. I was one of those guys. And so they just took my job and gave it to him. Didn't give a fuck. You better act like that could happen to you any day, no matter how much your boss loves you. Because it can. That's all I'm saying. And don't prepare your children for the world you grew up in. If you're like me and you're raising grandkids, don't prepare them for the world that you grew up in. Teach them the values that made you successful. Hard work, determination, show up on time, loyalty, all of that. Absolutely teach them that. I pulled this company out of bankruptcy, Jason said, the guy that laid him off. I'll tell the story someday about that, a company that I saved from complete oblivion. And they turned around and cut my pay and stole an account from me as a salesperson. That's when the whole path went, but I don't have time to go into that today. But yeah, just know you're not alone, buddy. It happens. You save companies and they still screw you. So teach your kids the values, but don't prepare them from a mindset and skill set what made you a successful person, because it's not going to work for them. It's not going to work for them, especially anything outside of the trades. There are certain trades that will remain valuable for a very long time. It's going to be a long time before fucking Optimus robots are framing houses. The way we build houses may change. I think we're going to go to a model where we're building more houses out of concrete than wood. And we're using 3D printing technologies and stuff like that. Dude, that's still a ways out. But it will be trades that will be the closest to what you remember for your kids, your grandkids, when they're in their prime working years. Almost everything else is going to be completely different. You need to train them on the modern technological tools. And if you don't want to learn, you need to empower them to learn for themselves. It's not going to go away, and it's not going to take over the traffic system and turn into Terminator and kill you either. But it will terminate you if you don't learn how to do it if you're young enough. And so prepare your kids for that. And then I have a question for you. You know, you might have heard some negative there, but you also are mostly optimistic. How can that be? How can Jack the Survival guy that's talked about cities burning in the past be optimistic? Well, is the fourth turning here or did it already happen? I know a lot of you can't believe that maybe this is the dawning of the first turning, the new high. I'm talking about, you know, like the Neil Strauss Howe book and all, right? You know, the fourth turning. So I think that everybody expected the fourth turning to look like the last fourth turning with World War II and the whole world mobilized and or whatever. But I just like to talk to you a little bit about what has happened in the last generational cycle. And the generations, I've said this before, are possible. The generations seem to be shorter now because things move faster. So if you look at the generational cohort that was the silent generation, it was a 25-year period. There were silents that were babies at the end of World War II, and there were silents that fought in World War II as officers. It was a 25-year cohort. Generation X was a 15-year cohort, 1965 to 1980. Just 10 years just gone, right? So that's because of technology. That's because of a lot of things. The cohort that was the millennials was pretty short. The freaking Gen Z's like that. And also we got alphas in front of us. There's more generations now than typically walking around at the same time. Can't be, Jack. We can't be on the verge of a first turning. Really? Okay. Here's what's happened. We had 20 years of war. The crisis, the unraveling. If World War II was enough, 20 fucking years of Afghanistan and Iraq is not enough for it to have been a fourth turning. Okay. Almost all faith in institutions and government was lost. Anybody here trust government? Anybody here trust government? Now, it's usually the crisis that brings it back. But the real trust in government was re-earned after World War II, not during it. Everybody worked together to get through it. That helped re-coalesce it. But the high came after World War II. We had a phony pandemic. Is that a crisis and unraveling and a loss of faith in that? People lost years of their lives to that for no good reason, and they finally now accept it. Even the people that say, well, nobody knew, whatever, in their heart, they really know it was done to them. They know it was really taken from them. They really don't trust anybody now about it. About 20% of people don't know what a woman is right now. I mean, 20% of people literally cannot answer that question. Not will not. I'm going to get to the will nots in a minute. But I would say about 2 out of 10 people right now, you pull them over on the street, go, what is a woman? Well, and they'll say whoever identifies. Like if the person says whoever identifies as a woman, they already can't answer the question because that's wrong. But I would say about 50% of people won't answer the question. 20% can't. 30% of the 100 that say the bullshit answer, they're doing it to pacify the 20%. They know what the answer is. And they know in their heart what the answer is. They absolutely know what the answer is. I'm going to hit this question. I'm not going to have a lot of question time today, so I'm just going to go ahead and hit this one. Metosovich says, so did they successfully engineer the fourth turning? They may have. This is a social construct. The people that construct the social contracts and manipulate people, they're aware of it. I actually think their crisis that they tried to engineer was climate change, but it didn't work because it ain't real. Yep. Environmental pollution's real. A lot of problems we have are real. Acidification of our oceans is real. Desertification is real, but climate change is fake. And you know it's fake because the rich fuckers pushing it on you keep buying coastal property. And the insurance companies run by the rich fuckers that push it on you keep insuring them. So it's just not real. We've had more property lost to flooding in the mountains of North Carolina than our coasts. I'm sorry, it's not real. They may have engineered it. But again, I'm back to 20% of people don't know what a woman is and 30% won't say it to appease the 20%. You have to have a full unraveling to wind out the fourth turning to move into the first turning in the rebuilding. I classify half of the people of a country being unwilling to state a woman is an adult female human being. That is a full unraveling. I don't think you'd go past 50%. I don't think you can get anybody right now who's already like a woman? A woman's an adult female human being. And a man is an adult male human being. And they're different. Anybody that's still there isn't moving. The 20% are really fucked up. The 30% that have been going along to get along, there's a point where they start to break back to the other side. That's the rebuilding. The rebuilding after the unraveling. Homeschool's more popular than ever. Now, I know that we get short-sighted on time. But if you are close to my age, let's say you're 45 or older, right? I want you to think back. The year is 1990. You're either a kid, a young teenager, or a young 20-something. Can you think of an institution and group of people that were considered more trustworthy by the average person than the school system and school teachers? Because I can't. I can't. Maybe preachers or something. I don't know. But who did you trust more than a school teacher in 1990, 1995? Almost no one. Today, I would say that a majority of people don't trust the school system and don't trust school teachers, at least half of them. And a lot of people that say they do, they really don't. They just feel like they have to. Doctors, perhaps, Dirty Dan says. And I would say that would be a, Jake, I'm not answering questions you already know the fucking answer to. Please get on your plane and go. Dirty Dan says doctors, perhaps. Maybe. And do you think that they're a highly trusted group today? Or would you say about half of people don't trust doctors, maybe more? Interesting, isn't it? You have to have a full unraveling of trust before you can rebuild in a first turning. That's what the theory says. The only solutions being proposed that make any sense right now are what? They're completely new rebuilt systems, or they're bringing back dead, archaic, old systems anew. There isn't anybody that really believes in rehabilitation of the system right now. Like, we'll fix the current education system. No, it has to be replaced. The best solution I've heard, whether you like them or not, right? Whether you like Trump or not, the best solution I've heard to the college system right now is what I played for you today. You build a United States National Academy to provide basic college education and specialized technical training, and you make it completely free because it's all online. And I guarantee you there'll be ways to pay for certain assistance and help, and that might be to the people running it, or it might be to, like, you know, if Jake actually knew things, right, I might hire him to help me where I need extra help. But that's a complete new system. Economically, the dollar's dead. We all know this. We all know that if this gambit of you know, bringing stable coins under the banks and pushing it out, it's only a stall. What's the actual economic solution? It's something like Bitcoin. It's a scarce asset that cannot be inflated or controlled. It's a completely new system. In other words, what I'm saying is everything that we look at that we're really like, well, that could work, it's anew. It's not fixing the old. Why do you think Trump's talking about economic free zones and 10 new cities and a lack of regulation? Because rehabilitating the system that broke everything isn't doable until you build a new system and they have to compete with it. I'm telling you, maybe we're there. Maybe this is the dawning of a first turning. Not whatever you expected you were going to get out of a fourth turning. Go look at all the fourth turnings in the past. The people in them didn't know that's what they were doing. They didn't know that's what they were doing. And again, it can be abbreviated. It can be shorter. You know where the fourth turning actually falls apart and the authors admit it? Civil War. The Civil War crisis of a fourth turning skipped the third. They went 1-2-4-1. It's not a hard law. It's a macro pattern. Okay. It has been, you know, people say it's a 100-year cycle. It's been 96 years. If you ask when did the unraveling, the fourth turning, of the last cycle start, most people would tell you what year. It wasn't December 7th, 1941, a day which will live in infamy. That was the end. World War II was the end. It was the last piece of the crisis before the rebuilding began. Before all the boys came home, the boomers got boomed. We started, Eisenhower took over. We started building the American interstate system, et cetera, right? That was when it ended, and it switched over to a new first turning. When was it? 1929, when the stock market crashed, and soon after that, we ended up with a new president. We had the Civilian Conservation Corps, poverty is way of life, the Dust Bowl, a 10-year depression. About the only economic upswing during that period of time was when Prohibition ended. But that shit canned the underground market for booze and put a lot of people out of business that still at least had some business. Revaluing of gold. All of that shit started in 1929. That's 96 years ago. Don't you think that's enough time for a 100-year cycle to be completed a little bit early? Or are we still looking at the tail ends of the fourth turning, but we're heading in? There's an overlap. It's not a clean line. I think it's where we are. And I think that the issue with that is that it doesn't necessarily mean everything's going to be good for you. For all the talk of the greatest generation, the GI generation, again, those guys were minimum 25 years old during the war. When those guys came home, the younger end of the GI generation did really good. The rest of them just kind of got steamrolled over, and the silence didn't do that great. The people that benefited the most from the high were the boomers. If this is the dawning of the first turning, who are our boomers? Who are our boomers? Alpha. Kids shitting their pants up to like my 8-year-old granddaughter. They're the ones that will get the biggest benefit of the boom and the rebuilding. And then the next group is the Z's. If they can adapt, and they probably can, if they can get over their bullshit, and they probably can, that's the group. The rest of us? We're not the boomers of our time. Gen X? We're the silence. And the old ones. The boomers? Those fuckers are screwed. They had their day. They're the GIs. The GIs were not the hero generation. I know you think they were. No, the silent generation was the hero generation. And the boomers got the benefit of it. And this is not some weird form, right? This isn't some weird, the millennials, right? The children of the millennials and the children of the younger Gen Xers, they're the ones that will probably get 20 years of the prime of life, which is 20 to 40. That's where you make your nut. Right? That's where you hit your stride. That's where you really become what you're going to become. And if you've made it by 40, you probably end up okay unless you lose everything somehow. And if you ain't made it by 40, you probably never do. I know some of you are at 45 and you're still working odd jobs and you don't like me saying that. I'm not saying you can't, but you probably aren't gonna. It's pretty late in life to start something brand new. You have to build something with what you already have. That's where I think we are. Lion's Den says millennial isn't all a loss. I promise. I believe you, bro. I know some great millennials. I know some great Gen Zs. Alan Booker, fellow Gen Xer, he's working really, really heavily with Gen Zs right now in the world of permaculture and regenerative ag. I met a young man that was incredibly impressive in his early 20s last year when I was talking to Alan in Tennessee. I hope that no one ever thinks I'm picking on these younger people, because I'm not. I'm not. But there is a macro to these generations, and the millennials, especially younger millennials, are soft. And Gen Z as a macro, they're soft. But the soft...
Today we will take the billions and billions of dollars.
I don't know why that's starting again. Let's get rid of that. Anyway, guys, I need to wrap up. Thanks for tuning in today. This was an unplanned episode, and it went way longer than I planned. I want to just read what Hey Hey Alabama said here, because I agree with him. Every dog will have their day. One group is no better than the one before them or after them. They just have different opportunities and shouldn't crap on each other. Both live off of each other. Boomers made the way for Gen X and so forth. Yeah, I don't like when the millennials have been very susceptible to class warfare and generational warfare. And the standard millennial line is, I don't have anything because the boomers took everything. The boomers busted their fucking ass, worked their fucking ass off, and were coming up in the prime of their life trying to buy a fucking house when interest rates were between 12 and 19%. So you young millennials, middle-aged millennials, shut the fuck up about the boomers. The boomer that works on the street didn't take a fucking thing from you. Your government fucked you. And you're sitting here kissing the ass of government and talking shit about somebody on an age group. No. Your government did this to you. The kleptocracy did this to you. The corporatocracy did this to you. And it's that group is an inherently small number of people, and they transcend all ages. Boomers didn't do it to you. You did a lot of it to yourself, but the things that actually were done to you, that was done by the people that educated you to stupidity. Some of those were boomers. But most boomers, they were just hardworking people just like you and me. And honestly, I'll tell you this too. The average boomer is a hell of a lot tougher than the average millennial, because the way we talk about growing up as Gen X, they did that shit too. They just did it before us. Anyway, guys, maybe it really is the first turning. The dawning of the first turning. I hope so. I'll catch you tomorrow with an expert counsel Q&A show for the week. And we'll have a Friday flashback. And I'll remind you real quick. They did tell me as of yesterday, there were two tickets left for the beef processing class up in Alvord. It starts Friday morning, and here we are Wednesday afternoon. So that is super short notice, but they were there a day ago. I don't know if they're still there. So I will be at that class with my grandson. I'm going to be doing what I'm telling you guys to do, which is expose the younger generation to the real world. Nothing could be more real than there's a cow, and a couple of days later, there's all the steaks and the roasts and the ground meat and everything that came from it. The purest, most natural form of food humans can eat is things like that, and I'm going to take my grandson up there and teach him about that and help those guys as an assistant instructor, and I'll be there, and I look forward to meeting some of you at it. But even with the travel, it's not that far. It's only a little over an hour away from here. We're only staying in a hotel, so I ain't got to drive home every night. I will be back Monday morning. We'll do it all over.
They said you should have a house the American way. Dollar down, a dollar a month, and you never have to pay. There's a bed.